Preds win last night 3-2 in a shootout win over the St. Louis Blues, the defending Stanley Cup champs. And the Preds win both games, take all 4 points from St. Louis in one of the most critical stretches and weekends in 3 days that we've seen for the Predators. We will get to Rob Gronkowski in just a second.
Can I ask you this? Because this is what I was wondering in the whole shootout thing. I know how to shoot out. I know the rules of the shootout and everything. But this is what I don't understand. From a goalie standpoint, and maybe you don't know this answer. Because I definitely don't. And, you know,
knowing our own weaknesses is smart.
Porth and when he comes in or something like that.
Chris Mason coming up 9:30.
Mace, because he's a former goalie, so he should know. This is what I don't understand. The last, and I saw Soros do it too. Why in that moment? Why is the goalie coming out? You could protect it a little bit better. Because I'm looking at that and I'm like, why is he steady coming? Why isn't he okay to a point? Okay, now I'm backing up because now I can.
You're actually giving the shooter more to shoot at when you stay back. When you come out, you're cutting down the angles.
Okay.
The further you come out and then you back up with the shooter, right? As the shooter's approaching you, that's when you see the goalie back up into his crease. But when you come out, the further out of your crease that you are as a goaltender, the less you have to shoot at as a shooter. You're cutting down the shooting angles is what the goalie's doing.
Okay.
So when you come out,
'cause he can't see.
Exactly. There's less net to shoot at. The further back you go into the net, the more holes and pockets there will be to shoot at. So that's why a goalie does that. You'll see that on breakaways. You'll see that in those situations. Maybe they should like mix up the shootout situation and just like have a defensive player like chasing him down. I don't know. Just like change it up somehow.
Because I'm looking at that.
It's exciting,
like,
but it's basically a skills competition. It's not real hockey.
Why is he moving out? And then, because Carr, as soon as he moved out, and he started to move back, Carr slapped it right in.
Oh, yeah. And I'm willing to bet there's a lot of people that don't realize that it's really common. In fact, on when the puck's at the point and you'll see it go from point to point and you'll see a keeper sort of slide across the crease, he's not ever way back in the net. He's out on top of the crease.
So does it – say for a guy like Soros who's 6'2", 6'1".
Oh, Soros is very small.
Yeah. That works for him. Say a guy like Pekka who's 6'6". He covers more of the net.
It's still the same theory. Like the further out you get, the less the other player has to shoot at. That's essentially the rule. But if he's coming at you real fast, you better be able to back up quickly.
Exactly.
Because that's why Johansson's really good about that, where he can get you on your heels and then get you to open up space on the net, which again is what he did on Saturday night when he came out and scored quickly. As well. So, all right, Preds win. Controversial, of course, because Kyle Turris is on the bench making $6 million a year. Daniel Carr is in, and Peter Laviolette will, of course, not address it whatsoever, which is his prerogative, but then it leads us to ask a bunch of questions and have a bunch of thoughts in our head about why this is taking place. If he clearly doesn't help you win, then why is he on the roster? Make a deal. If Peter Laviolette doesn't think he's a good enough quality member of the team to help you win, why did David Poile give him a $6 million a year contract for 6 years? David Poile probably deserves a little bit of blame in this Kyle Turris situation as well. So there's a lot of things here that we don't really know the answers to because Peter Laviolette refuses to give answers. We got into it in the first hour. We'll get back into it. But I wanted to go a little lighter here. Mm-hmm. For a few minutes, and I'd love your participation from the audience on this because I know what national ratings look like. Most of us in the media pay attention to what the national ratings are, what's doing well nationally, what shows are watched and what shows are not being watched, and I'd love to know what Nashvillians are watching. 615-737-1025. But Rob Gronkowski is now a member of the media and is now on television. Mm-hmm. Rob Gronkowski is a fascinating creature. I'm not really sure what he is, but he's fascinating. I can't take my eyes off him, but I also have no desire to watch him all at the same time. This was his debut, correct? On Fox?
It's NFL not his Fox? Debut. He's done it before. I think he's done it
How many weeks has he done?
Well, not on Sundays, but I remember him doing a Thursday game at one point.
But I think this was his debut halftime set with like Bradshaw and Strahan and like all the guys. Mm-hmm. So he's brought up there in his cool turtleneck and his jacket. He looks like
he looks like Regis Philbin.
I think he looks like a bouncer from like 1994. Like he's in a Tom Selleck movie.
He looks like that old rock, that rock
that rock
picture.
With his like fanny pack and the
yes,
the turtleneck.
Exactly. That's exactly what it looks like. and probably has the same build too. Like he looks like a total meathead. All right, so he had some interesting comments, and I'm curious what people think. Are they interested in Rob Gronkowski? And this is what he said at halftime of the Patriots Cowboys game this weekend.
When there's weather conditions like this, good defenses need to become great. And let me tell you, it's a advantage Patriots anytime there's weather. You want to know why? The Patriots practice in any conditions. If it's rain, if it's snow, if it's 100 degrees, if it's 4 degrees, it does not matter. Coach Belichick is making you go out on that practice field, and he's making you show up on time, even if there's a blizzard at 7 a.m. And let me tell you this. If there's a little rain in Dallas, a little snow in Dallas, Jerry Jones comes down and says, oh, do you guys want to practice in the bubble today? Well, that's why it's advantage Patriots, and that's why they're kicking butt today versus the Dallas Cowboys.
Good job. We're breaking you in. Nice job.
I'm not following that.
Yes.
So, all right, here's my initial thoughts on this. First of all, I think it's a really astute observation. I don't know if he wrote it or if he had somebody write it for him or if somebody told him about this, if it was his idea. I don't know if he's got good producers, good writers. I don't know. It's actually a really high-quality take about the weather and Belichick, and he's got insight, right? He's got insight into how the Patriots practice. Do you guys want to listen to that guy talk? Is he interesting to you?
You know what? I thought about this, and is he going to give us things when the Patriots play? Of course he's going to give us things when the Patriots play. He's going to give us an insight when the Patriots play. It all depends on what you, the viewer, are anticipating, what you want as a viewer. If you want an analysis of some breakdown and everything else, then he's not going to give that to you. Because I'm watching him, and he's just regurgitating the same thing over and over and over again. And he's not going to give you what you want from a substance standpoint in regards to, you know, breaking down.
Like why the Baltimore offense is going this way or that way.
He's not going to do that. He's going to give you the jokes. He's going to give you a laugh. He's going to give you surface stuff. He's going to break it down a little bit.
Which is what he is as a person. Exactly. Like he's dancing bear, right?
They got him on there because he gives you an insight into the probably the greatest franchise in football history.
Well, what about the other 31 teams?
And the greatest coach. That's what Howie – is it Howie? Is Howie on it? Yeah, Howie and Strahan and
Terry and Jim.
That's what they are there for. He's there to give you that particular insight on – because the New England Patriots are always relevant.
But can you bring
– he's going to give you that.
But can you build an entire career off of being an analyst – off of one team, even if it is the biggest, most valuable team? Like, I'm just curious. Like, I don't like listening to his voice.
They're going
to
get him off of there quickly if he can't transition. You know?
I guess.
Because here's why they're going to get him off. Because the listeners are going to start to voice their opinion. They're going to start tweeting about it. It's all fun and games now, but the more they tweet about it.
But why is he's a social media viral sensation. Like, he was in Nashville – what was it, like two off seasons ago? And he's hanging out in Germantown, and he Snapchats one person, and then like the whole city shows up to see him and party with him. Uh-huh. Like everybody wants to party
with
Rob Gronkowski.
They're cool with that. But the football girl or guy, that's not what they want when they are watching these halftime shows or these pregame shows. That's not what they want. They will deal with it at the beginning because it's it's Gronk. But then after a while, it's kind of like what happened with Witten. You know,
They turned on Witten.
Yeah, exactly.
Quickly.
After a while, they turn. And Witten is a lovable guy.
And he's a nice guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
After a while,
not that Gronk's not nice.
Exactly.
But he's
they turned
guy.
On Witten. They were like, no, we.
Yeah.
So the listeners and the viewers, they will tell you the truth after a while. And to me, he works better on a show like Good Morning Football.
Where it's
he
a little bit more in the weeds, personality.
Yeah, personality. He works better. That's why, because we talked about this, that's why Chuck and Shaq work so well together. Because here's the thing. Not only are they just, Chuck is just goofy and everything else. Shaq is just a big kid.
Literally larger than life.
Absolutely.
Literally.
But here's the thing. This is why people love them. Because they give you substance, too. They give you substance too.
They have something to say.
They from their experience and everything, they can talk about the other teams and the other players. They just don't talk about L.A.
Right.
He just don't talk about Philadelphia or the Phoenix Suns. They talk about everybody. If Gronk doesn't get to that point, the people will let Fox know.
Because that piece of audio there where he like took a shot at Jerry Jones and the Cowboys practicing in the bubble, like it was good.
Oh, Jerry's going to have something to say about that.
But that was really good.
Jerry owns all that, really.
Sure. It was really, really good. I just wonder how limited in scope he's going to be. And does the act wear thin, or are people obsessed with him? So my question for you guys out there listening, and we've already got a couple people on the line, so we're going to get to you guys when we come back, 615-737-1025. What works?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you like watching? Game day works. Game day's worked for 2.5 decades.
Okay, what did we say?
Why does Chuck and Shaq work?
It takes a crew, because I feel like you get balance with the NBA on TNT.
Exactly.
Because you have Ernie, who's the setup host, and he's still funny. You got Kenny, who's funny, but he's going to give you actual analysis.
Right, right.
And then you got Chuck, and you got Shaq that bickers back
who
and forth.
Who knows what the hell
they're
going to say.
Because I can't even remember a good take from either one of those two, but it's entertaining because there's balance. Like, NFL on Fox don't have that balance. College Game Day has that balance with Howard and Reese and Corso, so it's balanced.
Does Gronk, though, give you that Chuck Shaq sort of goofy, but also, like, that's, again, that piece of audio there where he talks about the Patriots practicing and weather no matter what at 7 a.m. in a snowstorm, that's good insight. That's actual things to say, but then he also does it with, like, this flair of, like, this, you know, Jersey, you know, meathead guy that wants to go dance in the club, where he's like, where he takes a shot at Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. So he gave you both. He gave you some entertainment and he gave you good analysis. I want to know what people in Nashville, though, what works for you on television? Mm-hmm. What do you watch from a content standpoint that works? We know you watch Game Day.
Yeah.
And we know what the national audiences watch, but I want to know what Nashville people watch. Why does it work? And is Gronkowski interesting to you? 615-737-1025. We'll do that when we return right here on Morning Drive. Preds win last night 3-2 over the St. Louis Blues. Back-to-back wins over the Stanley Cup champs, and maybe the schneid is over for the Blues. We'll get back into that a little bit later on in the show with Chris Mason. We got Josh Ward coming up in a few minutes, but here on Morning Drive, I am fascinated by Rob Gronkowski, whether he's on a booze cruise or he's at a nightclub or if he's in Vegas or if he's at the Kentucky Derby or if he's on Fox television on Sunday mornings. I am fascinated by Rob Gronkowski. I am not yet sold on whether or not I want to listen to him talk about football yet. But if I told him to sit up there and tell me about like life experiences, I might listen to everything he has to say. So I'm fascinated if Nashvillians are interested in Rob Gronkowski and what works for you guys out there as sports fans. Game day clearly works. You know, NBA on TNT clearly works. There are certain things that work. I'm curious if people think Rob Gronkowski is going to work. Adam, first up here on the show. Adam, what's up?
What's up, buddy? All right, so number one, I kind of missed you guys last week, and everybody won. So I'm not going to talk sports with you guys for a while, not until somebody starts to lose. So, you did give me an opening here with Gronk, though. I feel like my ears are bleeding, dude. There are some people I could hear talk, and it instantly changes my mood. He's one of them, because not only is he a Yankee, dude, I live down here. I'm below the Bible Belt, man. I live down here. I was raised down here. I don't want to hear that stooge, man, and I certainly don't want to hear him gloat about the Patriots. Shut up. You're done. I don't want to hear you. Get off my TV. Absolutely not, man. I get it. People like him. Whatever, dude. I wouldn't take him. If he was knocking on my door trying to sell me something, I wouldn't open the door and talk crazy to him. But
you're telling me if Rob Gronkowski knocked on your door, you wouldn't open the door?
I would go at the Ring doorbell and I would boo him until he left.
We've got one clear vote. No,
Rob Gronkowski. That's a no.
Listen, I will not deny this as someone who's worked very hard on getting rid of any accent whatsoever my entire life, because I've lived in the North, I've lived in the South, I've lived in Texas. I mean, I've been south of the Mason-Dixon line since I was 5 years old, so I've worked very hard on my non-regional diction. I find it hard to listen to his accent. I find it hard to listen to like any severe accent, right? Like whether it's Minnesota or Alabama. Whether it's super
red. It all depends on who's talking, though.
Now, if it's a southern drawl, that's different. I don't mind a southern drawl, but like Minnesota, like I can't listen to a person talk like that. I can't listen to any severe accents that just have a tough time with. But I wonder if that's going to hurt Gronkowski, because he sounds like a Jersey meathead.
Yeah, I mean,
he just does. I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just, he's, it's just what just, he sounds like.
He's one of those guys, and for the most part, I'm not a big pregame, you know, guy where I got to watch all the shows. But
I don't think people watch those shows.
I tune in from time to time, and some things I like, some things I don't. Some things I just think they go overboard, and the enthusiasm I think is fake. Half the time. But Gronk is one of those guys where if I see him, I'm like Adam. I don't really want to hear. And he could be a nice guy. I'm not saying he's not a nice guy.
He's never really been in trouble. It's not like he's a bad guy.
He's just a good guy. But I don't want to hear. It's like certain things, like if I see someone on television, it's like, I'm not listening to that. I'm a turn. He's one of those guys. And like I said, I mean, eventually, like they did Witten, they'd get you off and you'd be wanting to go play football again.
So for me on Sunday morning, like Saturday mornings, it feels like we all, especially in the South, and in Nashville in particular, we have a sort of like a set routine. And game day is a part of that process every single Saturday.
That's the only thing I really like watching is game day.
It's great. And it's worked. It's an institution. It's become part of the sport. It's going to go to Minnesota this weekend, which is going to be great. I have found, like, my Sunday mornings have evolved so significantly. I'm either with family or I am watching fantasy stuff. Fantasy sports, I get more information about what's coming up on NFL Sunday on fantasy shows than you do on any of these sort of like, you know, I used to watch NFL Countdown when I was a kid every day. I loved NFL Countdown in the 90s. And then,
but that was with Berman and,
because it was the only place you could really get the information. Now you can get it everywhere. There's 16 different channels that carry it.
Twitter, everything.
And
else.
I'm more interested in stuff. I don't watch any pregame stuff with the NFL. I
can't. It's hard for me to watch it.
I check it like 11:40 for fantasy updates. And once I find out who's playing or not playing, I set my fantasy lineups, and that's it. And then I'm off and running, and I'm watching the game. And that's not the way I do it in college. I don't know how people in Nashville do it. I don't know why they're going to tune in to Rob Gronkowski. Nate wants to chime in. Nate, what's up?
Morning, guys. How's it going?
Going well.
So I like Gronk as a person and as a player, but I don't know how he would be as an analyst. Whenever I hear something about Gronk, it's like, oh, what did he do this time? Because this should be funny. But if he tries to be an analyst and I don't want him to force his humor on us because I like to watch pregame and postgame and listen to pregame and postgame of college football and the Preds because you know you're going to get good insight, but you're also going to get that subtle humor. They're not forcing it on you. And I feel like that's what...
ain't nothing subtle about Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, I feel like Gronk might try and force it too much.
Thank you. That is a
I don't think he's forcing it. I think he's naturally...
No, not him forcing it. The network forcing it.
Well, that may be true.
The network is forcing that on the viewers. Because it doesn't seem like when you're watching Gronk and you're watching the other three guys on the panel, they don't mesh. It doesn't.
Nothing about it. There's no chance that Terry Bradshaw and Rob Gronkowski go have a beer together.
Like when you I always go back to either Game Day or either TNT. When you're watching Game Day, those three guys, take Lee Corso out because Lee is a little bit older.
He's more of a character.
But those three guys, you can see those three guys just hanging out.
Talking ball.
All three of those guys hanging out, talking ball and laughing and whatnot.
Well, they're all so smooth. Yeah.
And then on TNT, you can see all four of those, Ernie, all those guys acting a fool, hanging out, talking ball.
Although Chuck and Shaq would still have to be on opposite ends
of the
table.
Absolutely. You at one end of the bar and I'm on the other. You at that end of the table, I'm at the other. But when you watch Gronk, no.
He doesn't
fit
in.
Yeah, they are not. There's no smoothness.
It's also his first.
To it.
It's like his first real chance at broadcasting. So
and you got to give him a chance. Just like we said about Witten, just give him a chance to see how it happened. And it didn't work. The people were loud. They spoke. and went and said, I'm going back to football.
Yeah, it takes time to gel because I know on TNT when they bring like Chris Webber in, they bring Candace Parker, although I like their analysis and they're really good. That.
It's herky-jerky.
It's just not the same feeling, so I kind of like tune out. Even when they bring Reggie Miller, who Reggie Miller has still been in there for a while with
Reggie's
so smooth.
Analyst, more play-by-play.
Exactly.
Color.
So it's just, I guess it just takes it time to gel, and I guess maybe also the age difference between Gronk and Terry and the rest of those guys.
All of them.
Those guys don't relate to any of his humor whatsoever. Yeah.
Now, but again, maybe that's what they're going for because everyone wants the younger demographic. Now, everyone wants younger people to watch and listen to what they're doing. We do too. And he's polarizing. From what I'm hearing on Twitter and from what I'm hearing from our calls is that Gronkowski is a polarizing individual. You love him because he's this goofball, giant puppy dog, you know, guy who dances in the club. Or you hate him because he's a biased Patriots guy who's only going to talk about the Patriots and has a terrible Northeastern accent. Like, it doesn't feel like there's middle ground, but some of this is where the media has gone in general because fans don't react anymore to, like, middle-of-the-road, nuanced, difficult,
complex
conversations.
They want it one extreme or the
other. Like, they don't... People listen to and gravitate towards polarizing topics and behavior now. Unless we fix that as consumers, I don't know if that's ever going to get fixed.
But here's the one thing that I do enjoy about this demographic, this age group, generation, whatever they are, because they're not the millennials, they're generation, whatever.
Well, it's millennials and then the next one is.
It's the next one, so it's kind of a mix.
And I don't identify as a millennial anymore.
But I'm talking like the 21 or 18 to,
18 to
like
34.
That group, what I will say about them is that I do enjoy that they will quickly let you know whether they like it or not. You're funny at the beginning, but I think eventually this group, they're smart enough. This is probably the smartest and most intelligent. They act dumb sometimes.
Well, especially from
the
media.
They do crazy things. But these are some of the most intelligent, smart group of people that we have seen in a very long. This group of people, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds, they do some crazy things. But
they are
intellectually,
media-wise,
they are smart. And they will tell you. Yeah. After a while, nah, we're done with this. If you can't give us something other than this, this giggling and laughing and meathead stuff, we're done with you. Bring somebody else on. They will quickly let Fox know that he's not working.
It's a good point because, again, I think the savviness of the younger generation when it comes to media, and I'm not just talking social media, I'm talking media in general, it's an incredibly savvy group. I did not grow up with email in school. I like email and computers came to me while I was in grade school. You had probably already gotten into college by the time computers were like mainstream. This generation, my daughters,
they grew up on it.
Every
all
single
they know.
Part of their life is going to be soaked in this stuff. That now there's lots of negatives that come along with that, but there's a lot of positives, and a lot of those positives, like you're saying, is people see right through it. Mm-hmm. I think Rob Gronkowski's pretty authentic. That's the thing about him. If it works, it's going to work because he's just going to be himself. And people will gravitate towards authenticity. I think this generation also sees through the BS. Mm-hmm. They see through the stuff when you're acting and you're pretending and you're trying to be something else that you're not. I think the younger generation sees right
through
that
like
stuff.
Like the network forcing. I'm not saying that Gronk isn't genuine and authentic in what he does. I think that's just him. He knows no other way.
But if he's not good.
But if are you as Fox forcing this on us now?
And they'll pick up on that.
Exactly. That's what they'll pick up on.
No question. All right. Tennessee Volunteers get a big win over the weekend. They're bowl eligible. They got Vanderbilt coming up this weekend. We normally have Josh Ward on Fridays. He will join us when we return to talk Vols as they prepare to try to get to 7 wins over the weekend and recap what they did against Missouri. Josh Ward, when we return, Morning Drive. The Tennessee Volunteers are bowl eligible. Josh Ward joining us here from WNML and Morning Drive. Derek Mason, Braden Gall. And Josh, can you believe that I can say those words?
No, I can't. The season has been quite a roller coaster up and down, and you could have made a lot of money or lost a lot of money on midseason bets with Tennessee, depending on where you thought things were a couple of months ago.
I'm sure because this team, there were a lot of questions after 3 games of their schedule when they lost to Georgia State and Utah. BYU, I always get too mixed up when they lost to BYU. And granted, they had the game won. you know, you have a debacle at the end. They blow in the coverage and it's a touchdown. But now that they're on a, what, six-game win streak here, what does that say about how Jeremy Pruitt and this coaching staff has kept this team together? Because this team could have fell apart after, you know, three games. It could have fell apart after the Alabama game. But they stuck together, and they've had some impressive wins toward the latter part of their schedule.
Yeah, they have. And you're right, they've stuck together. And that, I think, is the overall story of the team this season. And back in September, when Tennessee was 0-2 and when Tennessee had lost to Florida 34-3, I think a lot of us were questioning, hey, is this team going to stick together? Is this team going to continue to fight, or is this team going to fold? And I don't think we were wrong to question that, because I think Jeremy Pruitt wondered if that was going to happen. That's why he had that team meeting after the loss to Florida, because he challenged them and said, hey, we still have a chance to save this season, but here's what we need to do to make it happen. And he's talked about that publicly now, and I think over the last few weeks he's made it clear that was a big point in the season, and everything was not fixed immediately, but there was a difference in the way Tennessee looked when it came out against Georgia. The end result was still really disappointing, but remember that they made the quarterback change. Overall this year, Jarrett Garantano has been the best quarterback for Tennessee, but he wasn't good enough in September, and they needed to do something different, and that was probably good for all the players on the team, including Jarrett Garantano. So the veterans, the way that they have led, that's a big part of it as well, because in that meeting, Jeremy Pruitt looked to the older guys and said, hey, you've got to lead the way, and Daniel Batuli, Nigel Warrior has been a better player, Daryl Taylor, Garantano, Trey Smith, who's a junior but maybe the best player on the team, they all stepped up. Juwan Jennings, of course, Marquez Callaway, and helped lead Tennessee to this point.
Josh Ward joining us here, and obviously there will be a – I think there will be a fascinating long-term discussion about Jarrett Garantano's legacy in Knoxville. I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation over the years to sort of look back. But with Juwan Jennings – you know, we were talking yesterday, Josh, and I was trying to come up with sort of modern era guys, and you and I got to know each other back in the mid-2000s, early 2000s, when the team was still good, and Jason Witten comes to mind from that era. John Henderson, you also had. Then the next era was Eric Berry. Then the next era after that is Josh Dobbs and Derek Barnett. Is Juwan Jennings in the same category amongst Tennessee fans as some of those names now because of how his career has played out? He's been through a lot of adversity, and now is clearly the dog on this team?
Individually, yes. One thing that hurts him is that the team just hasn't had as much success, but I think that actually is a statement to what he's done and how he's viewed, that fans still, in the moment at least, put Juwan Jennings in the category as some of those other guys when they were on teams that wanted a higher level. And in those names you're talking about, they didn't win championships either, so it has been a different run here in the last 15-plus years for Tennessee. But Eric Berry, I think, is the only one in the last 15 years that I could say with confidence, yeah, he would rank higher in the approval rating, if that's how you want to describe it, among fans while he's there. Derek Barnett continued to climb. A lot of those guys did in that 2014, 15, 16 range. It didn't end well, but there was a time where Jalen Hurd was loved by fans. Josh Dobbs, it's kind of after the fact. After the fact, I think fans have looked back and said, you know what, we didn't appreciate him. We'd love to have him and what he was able to do with this team. Juwan's right up there with any of those guys. It's because of the way that he plays, the plays that he makes. And before the season, remember 2016, you have the play against Tabor, you have the Hail Mary to beat Georgia. So you do have big game-changing plays. And then the way that he has helped rally Tennessee's football season, which could mean the program, what happens moving forward could even elevate Juwan Jennings' status and how fans view him, I think, even higher.
Yeah, because he's arguably has become, you know, the sort of the heart and soul of at least the offense, because he plays with a toughness, and I'm talking Juwan Jennings. He plays with a toughness and this innate ability to just go out and I think he truly believes that when he steps on the field, he's the best player on the field that given Saturday, regardless of who they are playing. And I think that just speaks volumes of, you know, a guy that has worked through, you know, the things that he's been through and has been on in a program that hasn't been, you know, great the last, you know, decade really. And he's been a part of it for 5 years. Now, this last game, and I know I'm listening to everyone and saying, well, this game should be a blowout, and if they don't blow Vandy out, then you know maybe that speaks a little bit to you know the team and whether they're focused or not. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think UT win, but I think it's going to be a tougher out for UT than what many people are saying is going to be because it's a rival game, and we've seen Vandy get up for you know a team like Missouri. And then, but we've seen him get beat by 40 points as well. So I don't think it's just going to be a cakewalk. I think UT wins, but I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk.
Yeah, I'll be curious because, you know, Vanderbilt and its losses this season in the SEC really has struggled, and it's been a wide margin. But this is also, it's the final game of the season. They know that. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity to win a fourth straight against Tennessee has to mean a lot for a team that's had a disappointing season but could finish on a more positive note. It's also been, you know, it will have been, I guess, a celebratory week for Tennessee, knowing that it's become bowl eligible. Mm-hmm. Tennessee also, just from a football standpoint, it does need to clean some stuff up. It had penalties, didn't take care of the football well enough to where it almost could have lost that game against Missouri. It was very much in doubt in the fourth quarter this past weekend, and if the same mistakes are made against Vanderbilt, that could allow the Commodores to keep it closer. I do think Tennessee should win by a wide margin, but that comes back to Tennessee doing a lot of those things, and mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to happen. So the biggest key is Tennessee just can't lose because a lot of the goodwill would not all be lost because you're still going to a bowl game. But if Tennessee were to lose a four straight to Vanderbilt and to start and end the season, the regular season, with losses to Georgia State and to Vandy, that just wouldn't sit well with the fan base. So the biggest key, whether they win by one or 21, is to get out of there. I will say you do have the subplot of whether it's the point spread, but also – you do have some ticket holders out there over 6.5 from back in August, assuming they didn't burn them in the middle of September. So there is that subplot to the game for Tennessee fans who have stuck it out for the last 3 months.
Over the 6.5, that's right. And I think the loss, I don't think there's much to be gained. A winning record looks nice, and 8 wins with a bowl win would look incredible, and it feels a lot better than 6-6. But I think it's more about the maintaining momentum. And you've got all this momentum. You've got the early signing period coming up in a couple of weeks. What does this recruiting class look like relative to last year's group, where I know it took Pruitt till the actual signing period in February to sort of finish the deal? What does this class look like relative to where this staff accomplished last year on the recruiting trail?
Yeah, it's had some ups and downs. There was a disappointment a few weeks ago when Jay Hardy from Chattanooga announced his commitment to Auburn. That's one that I think Tennessee really believed it was going to get and was a priority player. There are a couple of in-state guys still pending. Tyler Barron from Knoxville, his father's on the staff at Tennessee. That's one they have to get. And then Amari Thomas is a defensive lineman from Memphis who will be announcing December 9th. Tennessee really needs to get him as well. I think that Tennessee can still have a top 15 class here. I think the momentum that Tennessee has created and the positive result here at the end of the season, and I agree with you, winning this weekend is important to just kind of keep that going. I think the bigger payoff could be in 2021. A lot of the big, heavy hitters that Tennessee was going after in June, July, and August, Tennessee lost out on a number of those guys because of the bad start. And I don't know that they're getting many or any of those guys back. They've kind of just moved on and gone in the direction of Georgia, Alabama, a few West Coast guys that have decided to stay on the West Coast. So I think the bigger payoff could be in 2021, but they can still finish on a more positive note with some in-state guys, and some other athletes that they're going after to close out 2020.
Josh Ward, man, have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for giving us
happy Thanksgiving to you.
Some of your time a little early this week. We do appreciate it, and hope mom and the new baby are doing well, man.
Yeah, same to you guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, and talk to you guys again soon. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Josh Ward right now in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. I believe has a two-year-old, two-and-a-half-year-old, and a two-week-old.
Hey, great, you know, year between each one.
Oh, man.
Two years, that's great. Two to 3 years is perfect.
My wife and I were watching, what were we watching yesterday? Shameless, which is great show on Showtime. We were watching Shameless, and in the very first episode of the new season, Lip, if you know anything about these guys, him and his girlfriend are having their baby, mm-hmm. and there's emergency C-section, and like the complications are there, mm-hmm. for like the mom. She's got to go into post delivery surgery or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I look at my wife, and I'm like making dinner, and I look at my wife, I go, "We're not having another kid."
Hey, man.
There's no, like, it was so stressful watching them go into the delivery room, mm-hmm. and have to deal with like the trauma of what could happen in there, how dangerous it is, and I'm just going, "Oh my God, I'm not doing this again." Yeah. No chance. No chance, honey. I'm sorry.
I often look.
You're the one putting yourself at risk.
I often look back and, you know, I love Bailey and DJ to no ends. But we, you know, from time to time, we have it like in the past. Once they got a little bit older.
Thought about number three?
We thought, you know, like maybe, you know, if you have, because my thing is you can't just have one. You got to have another. And that's no knock to the all the single, I mean, all of
I
the.
I would be totally fine with one.
all of the, you know, only children out there. No knock to them. But I'm saying if you have one, you almost, you know, a lot of times families say, well, let's have a second. Then you have a second one. It's like, well, let's have three because that kind of.
But you go from man to man to zone, though. When you go,
yeah,
when you go from two to three, it's just.
Sometimes it's better playing zone because when you play man to man, it exalts a lot of energy.
See, now that, like, I can take my 3-year old anywhere now and it's not exhausting. It's way more fun now. Uh-huh. Like, it's not tiring at all because she can communicate. She tells me what she needs. She can go to the bathroom, like, all this stuff. And it's so much fun. It's if I have to take two of them someplace, I'm just like, no, I'm not going. If I've got to be alone with two of them, I'm like, no, I'm not doing this.
That was
but the
18
month old is tricky though in public. So.
It's kind of That was always the fun time for me. Obviously, my children are 3 years apart, but when I would have both of them, for some reason, I like having both of them. Now, when it was just my daughter, my daughter went everywhere with me. I mean.
Yeah, I'm
it
good.
It was just everywhere. Yeah, she always wanted to be in the car with me. And she would stay up with me on long trips.
Fast.
She would stay up with me. Everybody else would be asleep. She would stay up with me and watch the road for whatever reason.
You just,
I don't know.
Is she in the front?
Stay up.
You're not putting her in the
no,
front
no,
seat.
No, she was in the back seat, but she would be in the middle. And she would be watching.
That's
stand
fascinating.
Up. But
kids
when
are
I had
so
my
weird.
Son, it was like I like having both of them together rather than apart for some reason.
But are they in the car contained?
That's
different than like walking through a store with two toddlers.
Oh yeah, they are
very different.
They were always. She was always good to her little brother. He was the bad one. He was
hear
the bad
that DJ?
One. Yeah, he was the bad one.
all right, it's Tuesday, and that means one thing, Derek.
Top four Tuesday.
You will get our rankings and our predictions on those rankings coming up when we return right here on Morning Drive. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Link studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. If you miss any of the show, we have moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. Rate, review, and
subscribe.
That's right, today.
RRS. RRS.
So I will make a, I don't know if this is a hot take or not. I don't think it is. We'll get to our top four in just a second. But let me ask you guys this, and I know Marquise, you're a big college football guy too. I think this will be the best 14 days of the calendar year we have as college football fans.
Of course.
I think the next 14 days are the best. You got Thanksgiving, Rivalry Weekend, Championship Saturday, and Selection Sunday all in the next 10 to 12 days, 15 days. I think it will be the best football, best experience. Enjoy it while it's here, folks, because college football disappears so stinking fast.
Hey, listen, I know we've kind of – you look at Rivalry Week, whether it's – Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, Auburn, you know, who else plays?
Oklahoma State. Which is a good game.
Everybody plays. Georgia Tech is called clean old-fashioned hate. That's a great name of a rivalry.
Here's a game you need to watch. And the only reason I'm saying you need to watch this and watch it closely, because this team might be looking ahead. And you just hope they're not. I think this team.
I know where you're going.
LSU.
Here. I know where you're going.
LSU and A&M.
A&M's going to swing.
Game. Yeah,
A&M's going to swing it around.
They played Georgia very close. Now Georgia doesn't have the offense that LSU has, but their defense is much better than LSU's. Watch that game closely, because maybe, just maybe, LSU is looking ahead. And everyone else is looking ahead to the SEC championship, and they're saying, well, they can afford to lose that game and still make it to the college playoff. Well, they got Texas A&M. I know it's at home, but they got Texas A&M. A&M is a hard out
and
for
they
anybody.
They got good receivers, a good quarterback. They can chuck it all over the place. Now, here's the thing, though. I think LSU and Ohio State have earned the right to lose a game. I think both.
But they can't be. But then they have to win their championship.
Maybe. I think if Georgia beats LSU in Atlanta, LSU still makes it. Now, I think Ohio State's toughest game will be Michigan this weekend on the road in a rivalry situation. But I don't see them losing to Wisconsin or Minnesota in the Big Ten title game, but no. I think they can lose to Michigan and then win the Big Ten and get in. I think Ohio State and LSU have done enough, and they will be 1-2 tonight in the rankings. They're 1-2 in my – or they're – I've got LSU 1. You know, we'll go ahead and do our rankings here. LSU 1, Clemson 2, Ohio State 3, Georgia 4. It's the same list I've had in like three or four weeks in a row since the LSU-Alabama game. I think I got no problem with LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, anybody being 1, mm-hmm. 2, or 3. I'm fine with all those, however you see them. I think LSU and Ohio State have earned the right to go 1-1 down the stretch. If they go 1-1, they're both getting in. I don't think they fall out of the top four with a loss because the teams that they're going to be playing are either so good or have a chance at another win. They've already built better resumes than everybody else by leaps and bounds. I think LSU and Ohio State can lose a game.
Yeah, because if you look at LSU, they've beaten Alabama, they've beaten Auburn. They've beaten Georgia.
Beaten Florida.
Texas. What more do they need to do?
Seriously, they don't. If they lose to A&M and beat Georgia, they're in. Mm-hmm. If they beat A&M and lose to Georgia, they're in. Like what part of you, why is it that, because this is what.
I'm already saying they're going to beat Georgia, but no.
Because here's the thing. I like Georgia. I like Georgia in the SEC championship game. I think they're going to slow the game down the way Auburn did. They're going to make it a low-scoring game. And I don't know if Jake Fromm and Georgia has enough offense, but for some reason, I can't explain it. I got like spidey senses that are telling me I think Georgia's going to play extremely well in that game. But again, I think why would you penalize LSU or Ohio State for losing when it happened?
Mm-hmm.
Because the losses would be to elite level teams right now.
Yeah.
Maybe not elite A&M, but really good.
But if they lose to
Kansas State's a worse loss. USC's a worse loss for mm-hmm. Utah. South Carolina's a worse loss for Georgia. Like, all these other teams have worse losses.
Clearly, regardless, unless LSU and Ohio State loses two games, and I can't see that happening, but there's a possibility, they are clearly one of the top four teams in the country.
Right.
Clearly, even with the loss.
Right.
They have shown clearly we are one of, from an offensive standpoint, Ohio State really has been the most complete team, offensively and defensively.
No question.
Special teams, they've been the most complete team. LSU has been the most high-powered offense that I've seen. Now, Alabama's offense
and
is high-powered.
Has the best resume, LSU.
Absolutely, have the best resume. Their defense could be better. They get Delpit back this week, I believe. They're All-American safety. My top four is LSU 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson, and then Georgia. Now, here's where it gets tricky outside of the top four, because this week and next week can determine some things.
Because Oregon and Penn State
really
are out of there.
Well, really one team it can, because I don't think even, like you said, even if LSU, Ohio State, and maybe Clemson lose one game,
I
think they're still in. I've always said,
if Clemson loses, can they still get in?
I've always said that Clemson is sort of like this year, sort of like the Notre Dame, where their schedule is not as tough and they can't afford to lose. If they lose a game, then they can make an argument for these other teams to jump them because their conference is so weak.
But even then, a 12-1 Clemson versus 12-1 Oklahoma.
But they're still one of the best four teams in the country, regardless if they lose or not. But outside of that top four, I got Oklahoma, then Bama, and then Minnesota. I got Minnesota.
What about Utah?
Utah's there.
Dude, Utah is so good.
They're there, but
you know how many yards rushing Utah's allowed right now on the entire season? For the entire season.
Yeah.
They've given up 615 yards rushing in 11 games.
Yeah. You can also say, who have they played?
Ohio State is like number 5 on that list, and they've given up 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
Their defense statistically is off the charts good. And they are crushing people by like 30 points a game.
But I look at Oklahoma, and to me, Oklahoma is still one of the best 5 teams in the country.
I would have Bama. I'd have Bama at 5.
They have had some, you know, they had a loss, obviously, to K-State. And that's a tough out going to Kansas, going to K-State to play. They had that loss, and they had to come back against Baylor and some other teams. But I still think that, and they didn't have C.D. Lamb either for one of those games.
Well, and Utah didn't have its running back, Zach Moss, for the USC loss early in the year.
So
we can go round and round on this. Oklahoma has not played good football the last few weeks.
Yeah.
They struggled against Baylor. I know they had 0
Baylor
points in the second
half. Baylor is a top 10
good
team. Yeah.
They gave up 41, almost 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter to Iowa State. They had to hold off on a 2-point conversion to win that game, and they lost to Kansas State. So Oklahoma has not been as dominant the last couple of weeks, but their resume has got better because competition has gotten better. Utah has just crushed everybody, but like Alabama, they don't have a lot of marquee W's. The best win is probably on the road against Washington, and that's about it.
Here's the thing, because I'm trying to because the committee looks at it like, okay, that was a convincing win. That was a convincing win. You played that game close, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
But haven't we said throughout this season about LSU, when they play right before they played Bama, we said, well, Bama hasn't been tested because they've been blowing everybody out. And we gave LSU the nod because they have been sort of tested, but still won
close
games and still won.
Right.
Well, why do we say now, and I know Oklahoma has a loss, but they played in some tough games and they won them.
But their schedule's not even close to LSU.
I get it.
They have the one win over Baylor. Texas now looks like Texas is 6-5.
Mm-hmm.
So that's LSU's like fifth best win.
Yeah.
That's Oklahoma's like second best win.
But to me, it shouldn't matter whether you win by 100 or win or two.
I think it matters.
If you win, you know, some games are going to be tougher than others.
It all depends
on where you play. Some games
are
just
going to
be
tougher. Why do you say Ohio State's been the most complete team? Because they have dominated people on both sides of the ball.
No,
right?
To me, it's been not necessarily the score. It's been they could have won games 21-0.
So you're going test now.
Yes, it's
game
control. They have looked like the most complete team, defensively and offensively. And they could have beaten teams by 10 points. But to me, Ohio State looks like the most complete team because they have both an offense and a defense and special teams. Whether they're winning, because they might only beat Michigan by 5 points. I don't know. They played Penn State close. That was a close game, really. So, I mean, to me, I just look at the eye test.
Yeah, and again, that like Utah's eye test off the charts. Like they have just
And the fact is, I hadn't seen much of Utah.
And
so
that is the problem. Yeah. So here's the good news, though, because I hear a lot of I saw Tim Brando tweeting about this, and I love Timmy. I would call Timmy B a friend of mine, and I'm lucky enough to do that. But I also think he shills for his network. And Joel Klatt, also a lot of respect for him, but he's got Utah at 4 over Georgia. Like, I'm sorry, Utah hasn't. And their complaint, Pac-12 fans, is that no one's watching the games. Well, the committee does. The committee watches every single game.
Exactly.
They see every single play in every single game from every single team. So don't tell me that it's a time zone bias. It's a West Coast bias because the committee sees everything. The committee the committee chairman is the University of Oregon athletic director. He watches every Pac-12 game that there possibly is. They're not getting penalized for those reasons. They're getting penalized because they haven't beaten anybody in the top 25.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Utah's problem is. You said, who have they played? That's the problem with Utah. But when it comes to, quote, game control, Utah's been great. So keep an eye on where Utah and Oklahoma and Alabama are tonight. That is the interesting thing in the rankings tonight. Where are those one-loss teams? Minnesota as well still has an outside crack at this. Baylor still has an outside chance to get into this mix as well. But I don't think there's a surprise in the top four at all. In fact, I'd be shocked if there was a surprise in the top four. I can imagine it will just be the four teams we talked about. We go behind enemy lines and take a look at the Indianapolis Colts when we return right here on Morning Drive.